Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Hey, Mark, how are you this morning?
I'm well, Francis. How are you today?
I'm glad to hear it, and I'm a little ticked off.
Oh, golly. Are you going to start every morning of your life ticked off?
The show's better when I'm a little ticked off. And you know it. And so does everybody out there listening.
I actually like you better when you're a little ticked off.
At somebody else. No, I'm actually not ticked
off. Actually, sometimes I tick you off just to see it, just to watch it.
I was driving to work, or to the station today, and I was listening to another radio station.
How dare
just
you?
Briefly, I was on
How
the way.
How dare you?
I was turning the dial past to get to 1450. And this is something I've heard from a number of different sources, a number of different times, in the wake of the contaminated spinach scare mm-hmm. and contaminated vegetable scare.
Contaminated beef scare. There's lots of contamination out there.
One of the responses is not... Oh, I'm sorry. One of the responses that is advocated by a lot of people in government and a lot of people in institutions and a lot of people with no taste at all mm-hmm. is... One of the things they advocate is you always have to cook meat to well done. And mm-hmm. if you're going to cook all your meat to well done, look, I know some people like well done stuff out there. But the stuff that we talk about, the differences in quality of meat, the difference between a really great aged steak at well done and an average piece of steak
supermarket steak,
no difference at all. Mm-hmm. There's no difference at all if it's well done. So if you're going to eat your meat well done, don't bother spending
right,
money on good
again.
Stuff.
And listen, we own two restaurants. We'll cook your meat however you would like.
Absolutely.
You know, whenever you ask, there'll be no questions asked. Whatever you prefer, however you prefer to eat it. What Francis and I are telling you is if that's really how you like your meat, then maybe you shouldn't be spending
a lot of money on a
great piece of steak. Exactly.
Because as you cook it, the differences sometimes are in the texture and in the subtle differences between an okay supermarket steak and a really flavorful aged steak. Those differences disappear as you cook the steak further.
You know what, though, Francis? That's not even my issue with that argument. Okay, because most of the people I find who have that argument, you cook it more to kill all the pathogens. Most of those people are advocating we can make it as dirty as we want to make it.
You're talking about in the industry.
Absolutely. People in the industry. I'm sorry. I'm not talking about consumers. Just we'll make the place as dirty as it could be. Who cares? Because when we're done, we'll irradiate it or ultra-pasteurize it or heat it till all the pathogens are killed.
What Mark is talking about is a lot of these big firms, like in response to, I guess the first big one was the Jack in the Box scare so many years mm-hmm. ago where we had E. coli. The food industry's response was, well, all meat now needs to be cooked well done. Now look, that E. coli came from someplace that wasn't clean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if we irradiate the food and cook it to well done, yes, you'll kill all the E. coli, but you know what? I don't want any E. coli in my food.
Right.
I want to, you know, and when we buy from local farmers, when we buy from traditionally farmed food, traditionally produced food, there's always a risk in food. There's always a risk. As long as we've been alive, there's some risk, mm-hmm. okay? But you're talking about a country of hundreds of millions of people, and you know, we're talking about two deaths, and they're tragic and sad and awful. And they come from, you know, huge concern, these huge farms in California. Mm-hmm. But the response is not to sterilize all our food so corporations can make it as dirty as they want.
Yeah, if we want to go to the, you know, Captain Kirk, I'll have my tea as a pill, you know,
or I'll
mentality.
Have my steak as a pill.
Right, I'll have my steak as a pill. That's not what I want. That's not where I want. That's not where food should be. Food is one of the great pleasures of life. Let's not take that away because we want to be sloppy and get it cheaply.
And there are choices that we make in life. And look, this is a good news story, okay? We want to report that, you know, two people died. Well, two people died, and that's tragic and terrible, and the practices that led to that need to be examined. But, you know, two people in a country of hundreds of millions of people this year so far have died because of food contamination. That's a pretty good record. I mean, right. How many meals have been eaten by the 250 million Americans in the last year? And this is what we get. All right. So here's the deal. I'm not willing to sacrifice flavor. I'm not willing to sacrifice really great and traditional foods just to be perfectly hygienic. I mean, you could boil, irradiate everything in your house.
Right. You're going to have to eliminate cheese because cheese has mold on it. Right. You know, that's kind of the mentality.
But there are things to watch out for at home. And one of the things that I thought was valuable was this woman did talk on the program that I saw and on the television I'm seeing a lot of people talk about things to take care of. And it also occurred to me that a lot of people who may have gotten back into cooking again didn't learn it in the way that traditionally we've learned over time from your mother, from your grandmother, the way to cook, and within that were certain rituals that kept things clean and hygienic. So this woman was also talking about some very good steps and some very important steps that people need to take, and one is to wash your vegetables. She was suggesting you buy a vegetable wash, a commercial vegetable wash, which is basically a chemical to put on your vegetables. We're not going with that one. But wash the vegetables.
There are some organic vegetable washes that are out there.
But the things you want to keep most careful of at home are cross contamination. If you're preparing some raw food you're about to cook, like a steak or whatever, you take that steak, whether you grill it or however you prepare it, and you cook it to whatever temperature you choose to cook it. A lot of people will then put that back on the cutting board where it came from initially, or back on the you bring the steak out to the grill on a plate,
right?
You put it on the grill,
and then that same plate
back on the same plate.
Absolutely, people do it all the time.
See why that's bad? Because the stuff on the plate, and if you prepare eggs or you prepare raw stuff,
I think that a lot of people think about this when they're preparing chicken or they're preparing eggs, and I think that there's been really good education out there for those kinds of foods, but. Even your raw vegetables versus, you know, that you haven't washed yet against your raw steak. I mean, these kinds of things, you know, you don't think about the fact that you're putting your raw steak or something you're not going to cook on your vegetable, the place where you just had your vegetables. But you need to make sure that you're cleaning those areas as you move from one space to the other.
And the other big thing is our eggs, of course. When we use raw eggs, we tend to coddle them, which is you drop them in boiling water for 15 seconds. The salmonella lives pretty much on the shell, and so you're basically sterilizing the outside of the egg, but you can't put it back in the egg carton that it just came from.
Exactly.
And then finally, the thing to...
Well, the other thing about the eggs, and we've mentioned this before on the show, is the little egg thing in the door of your refrigerator is the absolute worst thing you can use, unless... Every single egg that goes in there has been coddled
and sterilized.
And sterilized because that is a place where you could actually breed salmonella.
And the final note is what we have to worry about is keeping food that's not meant to be at room temperature at room temperature or slightly warmer than room temperature for too long. You either want it hot or you want it cold, and if you obey those basic rules, you don't have to worry about having your steak well done. That's just ridiculous. When you take a little joy from our food and a little joy from life. And we're going to have on with us Sally Schneider. The Improvisational Cook is her book, and she's going to be talking about how to make some of that joy in your own house. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Now, our guest today is Sally Schneider. She's written a book called The Improvisational Cook, which is a whole new take on cookbooks, and we really like it. She's a former chef-turned-writer. She has written a syndicated newspaper column called New Way to Cook. She's won both the James Beard Foundation and the International Association of Culinary Professionals Cookbook Awards, and she joins us today to discuss this new cookbook, The Improvisational Cook.
Sally, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Fine. Glad to be here.
Now, I really adore this book. It's a different take on any other cookbook I've read. You want to tell us or tell our listeners exactly what your take is on this one?
Well, the gist is I've encountered many people over the years that were desperately wanting to be able to improvise and were terrified of doing it. And they had all kinds of notions of what it meant to do that. And I think part of that was from seeing chefs on TV and all that sort of thing. So after many years of cooking and writing, I devised a way to help people into improvising. You can't just write a book about, improvising, because improvising by its nature is spur of the moment and impromptu. But there are ways to help people get into it, to dispel their fears, and give them very concrete tools that allow them to get going right away.
So, Sally, I had it. My parents gave me a book when I graduated college called How to Repair Food. That was for things that you had botched up. This isn't that kind of a book.
It's not that kind of a book. If anything, I mean, I embrace accidents, and I do it for several reasons. When accidents happen, there's usually a solution. It's not like just repair it. Often it's where can I go with this and move it into something else, possibly. And if you can't do that, you will have learned a great deal that I guarantee you won't forget, and you will apply elsewhere. I've often applied information with something that didn't work. I've applied it into a new recipe, completely down the line that I didn't expect. So. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I find about improvisational cooking actual cooking is when you get to be a pretty good cook, you sort of use cookbooks as a jumping off point, sort of as a melody on which to riff, you know, and that takes a certain level of skill. And when you begin cooking, you sort of slavishly follow a recipe. And this book is sort of a bridge to get people off of the buying this book and trying to imitate this recipe and helping them understand how food works. I mean, is that the purpose, you think?
I think that's a very good description, and I've done two things toward that end. One is I give recipes. The way the book is structured is there would be, say, a main recipe of a section that was a really good recipe to know anyway, and then I give a section called understanding, and that basically explains the internal logic of that recipe, so you get a sense of where the variables are, where it might go, ways to think about it, and how it works. Then I give notated improvisations that I have done taking that information and that thinking. You can use those notated improvisations as recipes because they're all quantified so that you feel secure with whatever level you're at. And if you just want to take them as ideas and fly with them, that's also what they're for.
So you give sort of variations on a theme, and then hopefully after someone sees a couple of scripted variations, they can make their own.
Exactly. Now, that being said, the variations can be pretty far afield from each other. And I can give you some examples, because the nature of improvisation is really free association.
Well,
you may start with, sort of obvious developments of a recipe, and then all of a sudden you find yourself leaping into something else.
Can I share? I just want to share with our listeners. I mean, the book is really well written, and not just as a cookbook. And I find that more and more in our food world, people are very good writers, and it's an engaging book to sit down and actually read through, not just to leaf through with flour covered fingers. And you write in a section entitled "Accidents and the Unexpected." Like life, cooking is dynamic and imperfect, often messy process in which unexpected events come into play. Accidents happen, and that's not a bad thing. And I think that's great.
Well, I think it's great. I mean, it's a very good approach to life as well. And we all know that we always learn from mistakes and accidents. And that's the best way to learn cooking is to be willing to do it. And to ask yourself, what would happen if?
Right.
What would happen if I tried something?
I think a lot of people are afraid that, I'm going to ruin dinner. It's going to be horrible. Nobody's ever going to let me forget about it. But, it's okay to make a mistake once in a while.
Yes. And I find that when I'm experimenting with something, doing an improvisation, if I let people who are eating the food, if I let them in on the process and say, this is a total experiment. I'm trying this. Here's what I was trying to do. What do you think? They begin to suspend judgment, any judgment they may have had, and enjoy the process and also enjoy your courage in it. People love
well,
that.
Well, I live in a city, and so it, you know, I also have the courage that if it goes awry, you can always order a pizza.
You absolutely can. And actually, there's one thing that I do address in the book is, you know, you don't have to be improvising all the time. If you're giving a dinner party where you really want it to be perfect and you're unsure of yourself, maybe that's not the place to do it if you can't tolerate, you know, the possibilities of it going somewhere you don't expect.
Yeah, Sally, I never suspend judgment.
Yeah, when the boss...
Oh, one of those.
When the boss is coming over for dinner, might not be the time to use Sally's Schneider's book, The Improvisational Cook, but we found it to be a tremendous book. We're going to be talking more about how to take the life's little bumps when things go awry in your cooking life in just a moment with Sally Schneider. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see. You need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Sally Schneider. And the book, her most recent cookbook we're talking about, is called The Improvisational Cook. Now, Sally, we were talking before the break about how, you know, life goes in strange places. And when we get a little bump in the road of our cooking and things, the sauce isn't turning out exactly as we'd like it to turn out, there are some ways to fix it, I think, that are general rules. Like for me at home, if I'm trying a new sauce and if it starts to go in the wrong direction, there's almost nothing in the world that a stick of butter and a pint of heavy cream won't fix. How about you? You have any cheap tricks like that?
Well, I think actually that's a really good one. You know, often I think that recipes really going awry, you know, they're pretty specific. So it's not so easy to generalize that way. But I can tell you that many people err on the side of not seasoning properly.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll think, oh, this isn't so great, you know, it's flat, this isn't a good recipe, when in fact what they needed was to salt it properly or to add a few drops of lemon juice or vinegar to pick up the flavors or even a pinch of sugar. I can't tell you how many times I've had a really well-prepared dish that was flat because it was under-seasoned.
Just aching for salt.
I mean, I'm amazed at the number of home cooks who just don't salt their meats before they cook them.
Exactly. And there's a whole stigma about salt that I think is really terrible. Salt is essential to good cooking. And if you're not eating all kinds of junk food and prepared food, normal salting of food is going to keep you at the recommended levels. I've tested it out because I used to write about this. So.
I mean, people have to realize that box of crackers that you're eating has, you know, 10 times more salt than you would ever use on
a
piece of meat.
The pinch of salt in your stew ain't going to send you over the top. Leave the Doritos alone and you'll be fine.
And what it's going to do is make something that is truly satisfying.
Yeah. You know, people don't understand the alchemy of salt. I mean, you have maybe $100 worth of ingredients or $20 worth of ingredients for your dinner, And that little pinch of salt is going to make it sing or leave it flat, one or the other. And
exactly.
We're going to go listen to the news in a moment. We're going to come back afterwards and talk with Sally Schneider, author of The Improvisational Cook, and we'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today we're joined by James Beard Award-winning cookbook author Sally Schneider, and we're talking about this great new book, which is really a new thing in the world of cookbooks, called The Improvisational Cook. Now, we were talking before the news, Sally, about how seasoning is so super important, and when you sort of get the knack of seasoning, especially with salt and pepper, you know, you can really bring your food alive. But if you don't have that, all the other stuff you do is not worth a lick of salt.
Exactly.
How do you teach people how to season? What are your rules to go by in applying salt and pepper?
Well, I'd say I would best describe seasoning as listening. It's a kind of, you taste something and you're using all your senses to see how it hits you. If you're not thrilled with what you're eating, if you're going, oh, you know, this is less than, I always say try a little salt. Now, in terms of salt levels, the best directive I ever heard was from the great chef Thomas Keller, who said, if you notice the salt is there, you've put too much in.
Mm-hmm.
It should just be the level where the flavor is enhanced. So start sparingly. You don't have to get it right all at once. And add salt in increments and keep tasting. That's the key.
I think that people need to realize that salt is a flavor enhancer. You know?
Absolutely. It is the flavor enhancer.
One of the other ways that we use salt, we make a lot of fresh mozzarella in our restaurant, and there are times when salt is prominent, but that's not like in a fresh mozzarella you should taste like this. They say the water in which you make fresh mozzarella should be the salinity of the sea, you know?
Interesting.
But on other foods where salt isn't, you know, you don't need it to be salty like a snack, like a mozzarella. You know, it just works as a flavor enhancer. But about the book, and you talk about, and for people who joined us since the news, The Improvisational Cook takes you and gives you some basic recipes and also tries to teach you how to get away from the recipes and how to cook from the principles and do a riff. So you have, for instance, a number of different riffs you offer on French toast. You have French toast, you have French fried cheese toast, you have bittersweet chocolate French toast, you have Jill's sea-salted French toast. Talk to us about what the differences are and where those things come from, or pick another item.
Right, and they don't all have to be breakfast foods.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the main point. But think of what French toast is. French toast is bread that's dipped in a custard, the custard being eggs and milk. Usually there's a sweetener, but there doesn't have to be. The essential formula is the eggs and milk. So I made French toast one day, and I thought, why does this have to be sweet? Who says, you know, just because we've always eaten it that way? So one day I left out the sweetener, which was a variable, and the flavorings like vanilla extract and all of that, and I used Parmesan cheese. And a pinch of cayenne pepper and some black pepper, and I dipped toast in that and fried it, and it was unbelievable. The cheese caramelized on the outside and got kind of chewy and crusty, but the bread had soaked up the custard, so it was custardy inside.
Sally, you know it's almost lunchtime. Quit it.
I'm the greatest torturer this way. It's one of my favorite things to do. So that gives you an example. Then I tried a chive French toast. I didn't use cheese. I just used snipped chives. Could not be easier. And it turned into this warm, oniony bread that was just, it's a perfect hors d'oeuvre with drinks. So then I thought, well, you know, what about a chocolate French toast? Again, in all of these, I knew what the basic structure was, which I explain in the book, which is basically eggs and milk with bread soaked in it and cooked. And then I kept saying, well, what about this? What would happen if I did this? So the chocolate one is absolutely to die for. I melted chocolate and stirred milk and cream into it and then added the egg and soaked bread in that for a long time because the mixture was so thick it took a while for the bread to soak it up. And then we pan-fried it as you do French toast. I kept it intentionally undersweetened because then on the plate I did this with an assistant of mine. We were having a ball, sort of divining our way, and we put a little pot of sugar next to it. So you dip the slightly bittersweet chocolate, warm chocolate toast into the sugar and eat it like that. And it's,
you know, Sally, I got to tell you, though, you're cheating because you started with my two favorite ingredients, bread and fried.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I started with it because that happens to be mine. I totally love that.
Well, we have the American Heart Association on the line, but I'm not going to take the call.
Well, let me tell you something, though. The book I wrote before this was about moderation in eating and using all fats but carefully and all of that. I know how this stuff works, and pan frying is a way you can, it doesn't absorb a lot of fat, just to let us all off the hook, and I'm always going for those crispy, fried, you know, textures.
Sure, texture is hugely important in the foods we enjoy.
But it's different when you fry it in a pan as opposed to when you fry it in a vat of oil.
Exactly.
Especially if that oil is a trans fat.
Well, you know what? We're talking about texture, and one of the things you talk about in your other book is emulsifying and how those flavors integrate. You know, how you can do that a little less calorically. You want to give us that little secret?
Yeah, that actually is a really great technique to know in any kind, you know, whatever your diet point of view is. Basically, the first premise is always use a fat that has a lot of flavor. That can be bacon fat, butter, goose fat. I love flavored oils.
I'm falling in love with you.
Butter is the penultimate fat as far as I'm concerned. And then, for example, suppose you're doing it with vegetables. Uh-huh. I would put the vegetables, say string beans, in a skillet with a lid and a little bit of water and basically steam them until the water almost evaporates. Then I'm going to add the flavorful fat, which will mix with a, you know, teaspoon or two of water. And I'm using a very small amount of fat, but it has a lot of flavor. And the water and fat emulsify. It brings them together into a kind of limpid sauce that you then toss the vegetables in. You can do this with beans, you know, dried beans, which notoriously soak up a lot of fat. And I guarantee it, you get all the texture and flavor of using a lot of fat.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same technique, basically, of using a little pasta water in a pasta sauce,
right.
Pasta cooking water.
You know, we had on the show a while back a guy by the name of Dr. Stephen Witherly. He talked about this emulsification effect. And one of the things that he said is this is something that we biologically enjoy, that we really enjoy foods when they're emulsified into one another. Like
it's sort of hardwired into our brains.
Really? I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Stephen Whitley is a food expert who talks about, he writes these amazing intellectual books about why we like the foods we like. And if you're listening out there and listening to them, you can go to restaurantguysradio.com and just do a search for the Stephen Whitley Show and download it. It's fascinating.
He is an amazing doctor.
Sally Schneider has come up with ways to come up with these textures that she knows intuitively are pleasing to us. And if you want to know why they're pleasing to us, you can buy Dr. Witherly's book or listen to us interview him on the show to get a little teaser. But this stuff is, there are good, solid reasons for this.
Well, I think I'm a textbook case, frankly.
The same has been said of me, but not with regard to food. We'll have to leave that for a different show. Our guest, so everyone knows, is Sally Schneider. She has a book called The Improvisational Cook, and it's a way to not only get some recipes from this book, but to learn how to get off the cookbook and use recipes like a melody that you can riff on and really learn how to cook. It's very important if you're learning how to cook to pick up this book. You can find it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest is Sally Schneider. Her latest book is The Improvisational Cookbook, which you can find out about and even go and order on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. I recommend that you do. Quickly falling in love with Sally as we talk about the kind of fats you like to use in your food. You recommend using flavorful fats like bacon fat and the like. And by the way, for my family who's listening, I don't want to horrify you at all, but the reason that my cooking tastes so good is because I put bacon fat. That's what I use. That's my go-to. You recommend using flavorful fats. Why is it so important to use flavorful fats?
Well, first of all, everything you cook with should have as much flavor as possible. It's easier to cook that way. In terms of fats, fats are fattening. So I want to use less of them, but I want all the flavor and the texture.
Mm-hmm.
So if you use ones that are really worth it, you can use less of them.
Mm-hmm.
Bacon fat is spectacularly flavored, and if you use the technique I told you, you know, that one, for example, or even a teaspoon of or two of bacon fat will go a long way to making a dish really spectacular.
And even if, like, you're cooking vegetables, to cook them in a teaspoon of bacon fat, it's just it makes them explode, and people don't know where it comes from.
Actually, I have a secret for both of you. Do you guys know what my favorite thing to cook in bacon fat is?
No.
It's bacon.
Well, wait a minute. Listen, I've got one for you.
Go ahead.
Now, what do you usually dress popcorn with? Butter, right?
Yeah.
Butter's a liquid fat. So
right.
Try throwing some bacon fat on popcorn sometime.
Oh, man, Sally, you and me, we're going to get along. We could be best friends, Sally.
Really? With salt.
Do you know what we use as our bar snack in our restaurant?
What?
We use popcorn. Popcorn is a perfect medium for flavors, I think, because it's got all the texture and it's fairly neutral.
Right.
Our bar snack in our Catherine Lombardi restaurant is popcorn that we pop fresh, and then we put Parmesan
and garlic
and olive oil on top of it.
Wonderful.
And it's just, but you have in your book, you have a truffled popcorn.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things in the whole book.
Tell us about it. Tell us how you get there.
So, you know, I was thinking about popcorn. And thinking exactly what I told you, it's butter's a liquid fat. What other liquid fats that are flavorful? Bacon fat, flavored oils, like I did a crispy sage and garlic oil, that sort of thing.
Mm.
And then I thought, well, what about white truffle oil? So I mixed white truffle oil, which is very concentrated, with melted butter, or you can do it just with olive oil and drizzle it on, add salt. It is unbelievable. It drives people crazy. If that's the one hors d'oeuvre you can manage to get together for a dinner party, and it takes no time, it will guarantee you success.
It will also fill your house with an aroma that is unlike any other.
Right, and you'll either love it or hate it, because it might drive some people from your home, because it smells like stinky mushrooms, but we really love it.
Well, you know, we could probably spend an hour describing what white truffles smell
and
like.
And not get anywhere near doing it.
Accomplishing the task. Actually, Sally, we have spent a whole hour describing what white truffles smell like.
Because we're radio dorks, and all we do is talk about food all day.
Yeah.
You know, another thing that I want to... Your book is a lot of fun as well. And what I like about the book, again, the point of the book is to give you some recipes and then give you some variations on that recipe to show you how to riff on a recipe, kind of like training wheels, you know, and then let you go off and, you know, you could use all your recipes for French toast and then you'll see what kind of things you can swap in and out, and you just make all different kinds of French toast at home, and you'll learn the principles of cooking, and you'll find some interesting things. Talk to us of Jell-O.
Oh, I love Jell-O. Well,
I don't love it. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute, but we have to, you know, when we use the word Jell-O, that is actually a trademarked word for the stuff that comes in a package. So I get away with using it by spelling it differently. All of you listening to this, spell it differently in your head.
Right, right.
Now,
Jell-O like yellow with a J.
Yeah, yeah. And Jell-O, though, what I do is I make real Jell-O. And the way you make real Jell-O is you mix a fruit juice with unflavored gelatin, and you can sweeten it further if you want. Now, you think, fruit juice, so what does that mean? Well, it can mean a fresh-squeezed Concord grape juice you buy at the farmer's market. It can mean apple cider. It can mean Meyer lemon juice that you've sweetened. It can mean berries that you've extracted the juice from.
And let me throw something out there, just something that we caution people on a lot. When you're buying juices and you're buying commercial products, the one thing you always want to look at the ingredient list, and you want to avoid anything that has corn syrup, because I find that corn syrup always makes a cloying flavor for things. But you can find all sorts of juices out there now in like Whole Foods and health food stores.
Even in the mainstream stores, you have your 100% juices
That are either unsweetened or sweetened with cane sugar or sugar or cane syrup.
Absolutely, including exotic ones like guava and black currant, which are sensational. Now, you know, one step down from that is a panna cotta, which is literally cooked cream in Italian, but it's not so much a cooked cream. It's a cream that is delicately, delicately thickened with gelatin.
Just a little bit of gelatin, so it shakes.
Exactly. So you use the same method, but with... You can use heavy cream. You can use buttermilk. I do a mixture of heavy cream and sour cream that is unbelievable.
You know, I think that there are so many. I could talk about your book all afternoon, and it's going in actually my kitchen. It's not going in the library at the restaurant. I'm taking this one home, Mark. It's The Improvisational Cook. It's written by Sally Schneider, and it has amazing recipes and really fun recipes like the Jell-O and the popcorn, but also savory courses as well. And it will help you to become a better cook and not just cook from the recipes, and that's really what
cooking
is all
about. And open
your mind. And open your mind. Sally, thanks for writing the book, and thanks for coming on the show with us.
It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks so much, Sally.
You can pick up The Improvisational Cook, which is a new cookbook that's out that we're really in love with, especially if you're just learning how to cook. I'm going to give it to my nephew, Connell, who's the aspiring cook in the family. And the author is Sally Schneider. She writes a lot about food and wine, and this is great from a cook's perspective as well as a writer's perspective. We'll be talking more about some places where you can find flavorful fats like lard from Heritage Producers in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We were talking for the last hour with Sally Schneider about her great cookbook called The Improvisational Cook. Really a wonderful way to help you learn how to cook. One of the points she gave is that if you're going to use fats, rather than use a flavorless fat, like use flavorful fats like a really good olive oil, or her secret weapon and mine is bacon fat or lard. And you know what? Lard is hard to find. Good lard is hard to find. And when you find it in the supermarket, you usually find partially hydrogenated lard, which is a trans fat. So what you want is fresh lard. It's very shelf stable. And the thing is, a lot of the lard comes from agribusiness pigs, which aren't very flavorful. If you want really good lard, there's a unique opportunity now. It's only available sometimes. You can get it. Of course, you can just save your own fat and make your own lard when you make bacon in the morning. But you can get really good lard from heritagefoodsusa.com. There's a link to those guys on our website because they do great stuff. And it's from It's the most flavorful fat, and two teaspoons when cooking your vegetables into your pastry crust. Lard is an amazing secret weapon, and go to Heritage Foods USA and get some.
But again, there's no reason you can't. If you have a flavorful bacon, I mean, I buy some from the Amish market nearby here in, I guess it's in Kingston. Great, spectacular bacon. You know, as long as you really haven't burned that bacon, all you got to do is filter out the little bits. Mm-hmm. And put it in the fridge and use it whenever you want. I mean, it is a great medium for cooking a lot of great foods.
Except that, Mark, when we talk about you're getting the Amish bacon or we get Nooski mm-hmm. bacon, that's a brand that we get sometimes. Very good bacon. It's the pigs themselves are raised well and are flavorful, mm-hmm. whereas most of the agribusiness bacon you get in the supermarket, the meat itself is very, very neutral from sort of agribusiness Franken pigs. And the only flavor that you get from it is the smokiness. Mm-hmm. From the smoked bacon. If you get lard from a pig produced by a family farm, either from the Amish...
Tremendous difference in flavor. I mean, tremendous difference.
I mean, and what you can do with this is even just on your vegetables or work it into your mashed potatoes, it's a different texture entirely, and you really need to use very little.
And again, I want to give you two other places that you can do this. I mean, I know a lot of people don't cook duck in their house, but it is a great... It is basically as easy to cook a duck as it is to cook a chicken. And you can buy ducks in your supermarket. They're usually frozen, but you can buy ducks in your supermarket, or if you have a good butcher, you can go buy ducks. And the dripping from that duck, one of the stories that Francis and I love to tell is David Page from Home Restaurant. We had kind of an all-night picnic barbecue, and the next morning, everybody got up and David Page made home fries with the duck fat.
Oh.
Well, I mean, one of the most spectacular foods on the planet are home fries made with really rich duck fat.
One more link to a friend of ours, Ariane Degan, who owns D'Artagnan. Mm-hmm. They're a foie gras distributor. You can go to, I think it's D'Artagnan online. Go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and you can find the link to D'Artagnan. You can buy fresh ducks from them. Mm-hmm. You can buy duck fat from them. And duck fat is even more of a secret weapon than pork fat. Just amazing. Well, and like I said, we have a call from the American Heart Association. They're on the line. They're a little mad at me. We're going to take the call.
Use a little bit less. There's my response.
I hope you've enjoyed this hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. Go pick up Sally Schneider's cookbook on our website. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We're The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.